in the AMTI process has created problems. I get the opportunity to go to a national level. I know that the Fed HUD program has the AMTI process because of the inability to be able to process information in a fair manner. Currently, no code will be able to meet the AMTI process. I'm going to just address a couple of things that I thought should be discussed. Local amendments are done commonly for the U codes as they will be for the Ag codes to address specific concerns in local jurisdictions. The residential code, which seems to be the biggest area of concern in regards to prescriptive issues in the IMC versus the UMC. The IRC was designed and is designed to be a very prescriptive code and an all-encompassing state document. So, with those items, I'm going to go ahead and open for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Russell. Are there questions?
I thought you said that the IMC was prescriptive. I thought there was the other
one. I'm sorry. Excuse me. I meant to say UMC is prescriptive. But the IRC, which is another code, is also within the family of the I codes, a prescriptive document. It's an all-inclusive document.
IRC, is that residential?
Yes, which would address a lot of what I think I hear concerns from the industry.
Excuse me.
Representative Roper?
Mr. Russell, yeah, I wasn't sure. So there's a international building code as well as an international residential building code, or?
Yes, there are a family of codes. And what we've been talking about primarily is the adoption of the IMC. And I'm just introducing the fact that when you talk about the family of codes, there are documents to address, you know, specific concerns.
So previously, before the international family of codes came into view, it was just the UBC that related to residential construction, or was there other things that, as an ICBO inspector or whatever you do, you were concerned with?
The UBC was used.
For residential?
For residential.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next in Fairbanks, we have Bill Sager. Mr. Sager, did you speak at the last teleconference? If so, I'd like to go on to those who haven't had an opportunity to speak.
That's right. I'm just here to observe.
Okay, great. Then let's go to Steve Shuttleworth.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you very much. Well, members of the Labor and Commerce Committee, good afternoon. I know it's been a long session, so I'll be as brief as I possibly can. I do appreciate the fact that you allowed the continuation of discussion on these three bills to continue. The City of Fairbanks has previously forwarded a letter from Mayor Thompson dated 2/27/2 and a copy of City Resolution 3753 for your review. We understand that the original language of the bills may have changed, and accordingly our remarks will be brief. House Bill 399. We have recently been made aware that the primary issue of this bill is the separation of powers between administrative and legislative branches of government. It is not our intent to engage in that debate, other than to state the record that we are opposed to proprietary reference to any construction code. In essence, we believe, as the gentleman said earlier, House Bill 399 will throw the baby out with the bathwater. Please recall, if you will, the debate that took place regarding Senate Bill 269 in 1998. The entire construction community, including industry, contractors, public citizens, as well as the Mechanical Contractors Association, proposed revised language to SB 269, which included the words "or other actually recognized codes." The bill was subsequently passed with this wording. We felt the legislative intent was established. Since approximately October 2000, the City of Fairbanks Code Review Commission is appointed by the mayor and the construction community have laboriously reviewed the various construction codes. To that extent, the city has formally adopted the IFC, the fire code, and the IRC that Representative Roper was discussing moments ago. And within the next few weeks, we'll be advancing the 2000 IBC and the 2000 UPC for screening. As you can see, the City of Fairbanks prefers to offer our local construction design community a choice in code adoption. House Bill 436. On the surface, this bill appears to be non-confrontational. It, however, is the most contentious of the bills. We therefore professionally and passionately oppose this bill. At the heart of the issue is the methodology in which the codes are adopted at the national level. The governmental consensus process is a process that has been used to adopt new codes in statehood. It is the same process that is used by this very legislature. Governmental consensus process involves input from industry, professional design community, contractors, and code officials. These groups can participate on committees and can advance code changes either through committee action or on the floor at annual business meetings. However, in the final analysis, the final vote is determined by code officials who represent the jurisdiction. These officials do not have a vested financial interest in the outcome. Their sole interest lies in their public protection function. Just as you, the members of the legislature, are lobbied every day and deluged countless volumes of information and perspectives from various groups, you must weigh that information and decide and cast the final vote. Not industry, not the lobbyists, special interest groups has the final vote. A direct line of accountability is established between the voter and legislature. On the other hand, the ANSI consensus process allows industry and special interest groups to be included in the final vote. At first glance, this may sound natural, but upon further examination, it is suspect and ensures that the financial vested interest of special interest works for the corporate good. Industry's survival is based on their ability to maintain or increase their market share in the competitive world. In doing so, this can be accomplished through code adoption process by introducing code language that is beneficial to one industry over another. If industry is allowed to have the final vote, codes can be adopted purely on economic goals. Issues such as restraint of trade, restrictions of methods and materials will be common. Presently, there is not one single state within the United States of America that has statutory language that requires ANSI accreditation, and for good reason. House Bill 437. We understand that there has been some language change to this bill.
Mr. Shuttleworth?
To additional time in which the codes may be professionally reviewed or debated, nor are we opposed to a sunset clause. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Got some tremendous feedback here.
We've got echo here, but you have gone well over your 3 minutes. If you could wrap it up, please.
Okay, certainly. In fact, I'm at that point. City of Fairbanks objects to any bill that establishes proprietary code language or any companion language that requires ANSI accreditation. I'd like to thank your legislative aides, Madam Rakowski, for the assistance and patience they have shown us, and the city representatives. You have genuinely made us feel comfortable and welcome this debate. And thanks for your time and sitting through 2.5 hours. This debate.
Thank you. I do appreciate your input and appreciate you waiting on until the very end here. Are there questions to Mr. Shuttleworth? Representative Rookford.
So, Mr. Shuttleworth, just to clarify, you said you adopted the IFC or about to, the IBC, IRC, but the UPC, is that correct?
If I can hear you, Representative Rookford, the feedback's getting just terrible here. City of Fairbanks has formally adopted the IFC, the International Fire Code, the International Residential Code, and we are within 2 to 3 weeks from adopting the International Building Code as well as the Uniform Plumbing Code. That's correct.
What about the Mechanical Code? Are you taking that in?
Yes, sir, we are, and we purposely waited for the last moment because of the litigation and the concern, if you will, over that issue late last spring. We didn't want to carry that through the construction season. We put it in the back burner, and I can assure you now it is on our front burner. And after these two codes are adopted locally, we will pick up the issue of the IMC and the UMC. Both will be put on the table here in Fairbanks so that our groups can take a look at it fairly.
Representative Rupert?
Have you approved any projects or designs that have incorporated the IBC into their project design prior to your adoption by the your local council?
Yes, sir, we have. The response that Mr. Watts made is accurate. It is very common for construction projects to utilize a newer code. It is recognized under Section 105 and 106 of the Uniform Building Code. It is no different than you designing the 97 Uniform Building Code when your city or municipality may be under the 94 Uniform Building Code. So it is standard operating procedure. It must be identified. There is no mixing and matching going back and forth between codes. And in fact, 12 days from now, the City of Fairbanks Police Department will have its grand opening, and that was built under the International Building Code. It's a doggone good building, and we're proud of it.
So it's not going to fall down, huh?
No, sure it's not.
Great.
Representative Hayes, you had a question?
Yes. Hey, thanks for your comment, Steve. I'm just curious, why did the city of Fairbanks go with both codes?
With both codes, help me out, Mr. Representative Hayes.
The UPC.
Why did the city of Fairbanks go with the UPC also with the international codes?
Well, it's a good question, but I really think it shows that what we're doing in Fairbanks is actually working. And there isn't really an agenda here. We put the both codes on the table. The International Plumbing Code was put on first, and quite frankly, I thought that was going to have a chance of passing. We had talked to various folks from the Mechanical Contrast Association. They felt contrary to that, and they were able to lobby and convince the local code review commission to go another way, and they did. We picked up the pieces, we've made some amendments, and we've moved forward. I think it's best to adopt the best code possible for your community or city, and I think if you fall down one track or one path, you really close your mind to other opportunities, and I don't really care if it's the U code, the B code, or the Z code, and I think the gentleman from AGC hit it right on the head. There's just so much fragmentation out there that we really have to start getting stuff together here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Brokrig.
Michelle, could you adopt the IPC and still have a local amendment for the heat exchanger situation?
You remember that issue well, don't you?
Yes, sir. Could you do that? Is that possible?
Yes, it's possible. In fact, I don't know that there's any discrepancy between the two codes presently on the single wall heat exchanger, norm at all.
Well, that's too bad. That's too bad. No, thanks, though. Thanks.
You enjoyed that last go around in 98, did you?
Yeah, I did. I really enjoyed it.
Representative Roper, you have strange interests, sir. Let's go to Mr. Chris Miller in Fairbanks, then.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Chris Miller. I'm representing Design Alaska, the architectural and engineering firm here in Fairbanks. I am a mechanical engineer, BE. I work with these codes every day. I have been to three of these meetings now, including the regulatory review committee where these problems surface. I'd like to point out that I do not have these codes committed to memory. I never have. The books that I carry with me are dog-eared from their use. And currently, we have been using the 2000 codes, this family of codes, for a year and a half or so. We have got several construction projects underway that are all using the 2000 codes. They offer some advantages. It was a very difficult process to learn the new codes. We went to many review sessions. We were part of the public review process with the Department of Public Safety, part of the public review process with the City of Fairbanks. It was not easy to change these codes. I feel very strongly for the mechanical contractors who are trying to learn these new codes. They are different. They are difficult. They are
regulations.
I can tell you as well that I'm working out of the building today. It's not much different. Recently, just last week, I was able to save significant money out of the Alaska by their jurisdiction and adopted the 2000 code, IBC, IMC, and IFC. They're using them. We've got three huge buildings under construction, two, well, you know, in the bidding process, and it seems to be working well. We are able to save money, but try to save structure. I agree with the gentleman from AGC, he hit it right on the head. We need clarity and consistency in this process. And the fact that I have to continually search through the regulations and the statutes looking for which codes are current is very difficult. It's time consuming and awkward. I would well advocate legislature to straighten this issue out so that it's clear and conform to everyone. We knew 3 years ago we were going to the 2000 codes. All that was available. We've been working with them, reviewing them, studying them, building on them. And I, the legislature can see the wisdom to remove all the private language from the statute and allow the state agencies to adopt the best code at the time.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. You were kind of cutting in and out. Is Mr. Powell still in Fairbanks?
Yes, ma'am.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hayes had a question. This is the State Farm Marshal. I know you were just online to answer questions, so we'll...
That's
yes.
Correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Powell, I'm just curious. How did you come to your decision of switching codes? Did you have a board or a group of folks from the different fields who looked at this process and came to a conclusion, or did you come up with a conclusion by yourself and put it out to public comment? Because it seems like at least the plumbers in this end, they don't feel like they had a lot of voice in this, and I'm just curious because I don't know what the process was.
I guess it's a little bit of both. Originally, the decision was that there's not a building code offered after the 97 Uniform Building Code, other than the 2000 International Building Code. So that drove the building code decision. Then the next logical choice, in the opinion of the Department of Public Safety, is what's the fire code? Which fire code should we pick? Now, we worked with the local fire chiefs, had a couple of meetings with them to sort of get a feel for what they wanted to do. And it was pretty much a split. Some wanted to stay with the Uniform Fire Code, some wanted the International Fire Code. Once we got the books out, started looking at the content, had a few training sessions, it was apparent that the International Fire Code was actually a better fit with the International Building Code, so a decision was made to use that as the base document. And the only other code that our office has adopted traditionally is the mechanical code. So we looked at that and we offered that as the base document, as the model, if you will. They're all model codes. None of them are adopted in their entirety. So we use the uniform mechanical as the model code for the base document. During these meetings, we had, we went four meetings. We had one in Juneau, one up here in Fairbanks, one in Anchorage, and one in Soldotna, I believe it was, on the peninsula anyway. And we had representatives from what we felt was a cross-section of everyone, all the affected stakeholders. And I will admit there was some confusion over who was really representing the mechanical industry. But on our sign-up sheets, we had people that appeared to represent mechanical interests. We had mailed, once the base documents were created, we mailed those to, I believe it was Linda Winters, which was on our mailing list as representing the Mechanical Contractors of Alaska. But there are some that felt they weren't included. I certainly feel bad about that. I think we made a good effort to include everyone. It was certainly no secret. But once the base documents were put out there for comment, then we received comments on those and made changes as we received comments. All comments were considered. We actually, as you know, had two open comment periods because of a typographical error in one of the notices. Between the first and second comment period, we actually mailed individual copies of the documents to the record of or address on record with all the mechanical administrators in the state. I think it was the 700 individual copies were mailed out to either the home or address of business for the mechanical contractors. They were the only group that we went to that extent for.
Representative Hayes, did you have a follow-up?
It's just a curiosity. It seems to me that before you all made your decision on which code to choose, that you would have brought in all the players who would be adversely affected and had the discussion before you even went out to public comment. And granted, I don't understand how your public process works, but I think we probably could have averted all of this angst and acrimony right now if you would have started the process that way.
Well, through the chair, I agree in part. I think the important thing to remember is that we did have meetings with who we felt were the stakeholders originally before we made the decision, other than the International Building Code. There was no other building code to adopt. The statute, the way I read the Department of Public Safety statutes, is we shall adopt codes. And I thought it would be negligent on my part to not adopt the code for the 2000 cycle. The only code available was the International Building Code, the only building code available. that's what, I guess, started the bus. And then we had, like I said, we had meetings with stakeholders before we made a final decision on the fire code. Then once we saw the cross-referencing in the International Mechanical Code to both the fire code and the building code, it was difficult to not offer that as a base document for comment.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I understand a lot of the paperwork that we've gotten here, you'll be able to, under the new codes, you'll be able to build a larger building without sprinklers, and you'll be able to build buildings with less fire doors and less fire stops under the new codes. Is that a fair characterization?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Through the chair, that's, to make that as a umbrella statement is probably not true. There are cases where you can find buildings larger, but in most cases, those require other means of life safety protection, such as fire sprinklers. The thing to bear in mind is that as these codes evolved over the years, there was one safety provision piled on top of another safety provision, somewhat like wearing suspenders and a belt. Oh, are they both really necessary? And the fire history was compared across the states where other provisions were, in some people's minds, less restrictive. But there was no data to prove that there really was a risk to life safety from changing those provisions. So in some cases, it appeared to be a relaxing of the standards, but on the other hand, there was no hard justification for keeping the stringent requirements in place. So I don't know, that's kind of a long way to go about the answer, but did that help?
I think so.
Representative Brooker?
Yeah, Mr. Powell, I take it that the regulations you promulgated went into effect on September 15th of 01, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, you were operating with a approximately $100,000 appropriation from the legislature, and when did you get that, and could you clarify the time frame and all that?
Oh boy, without my notes here, let's see, I believe that would have been the 01, FY01 budget is when that was given to us, appropriated for the purpose of adopting the international code.
So like in July of 2000, you would have had money, or?
Correct, that's correct. And with that, we hired an independent code consultant to take us through the adoption process.
Mr. Fosberg?
That's correct.
Okay.
I think we brought him on board approximately August 1st of that year.
And that was what, approximately $100,000, or?
Well, that was for the whole project. There was printing and conducting meetings and facilitating the committee groups and that sort of thing.
Did you make the request to the finance committees for this money, or?
Through the chair, that's correct. We made the presentation to the House Finance Committee. I think first was obviously our subcommittee, and then the Finance Committee, and then made the presentation to, I believe it was the full Senate Finance Committee, if I recall right, and they approved it.
And final question, Mr. Powell. I haven't had a chance to look at the regulations, but did you have anything in there for transitioning, particularly for the training element at all?
Through the chair, we actually adopted June 15th with an effective date of September 15th. And in discussing the issue with occupational licensing, that seemed to coincide well, because from, I believe, from September 1st, that allowed 2 years transition time for the training for the mechanical administrators. They have 2 years before they had to renew. And they required so much continuing education anyway. If that continuing ed was done on the International Mechanical, then they would be good to go upon their next renewal in 2 years from last September. So that's how that date was arrived at.
But what about the new candidates? I mean, that was the problem with OCC licensing, wasn't it? They had to switch tests right away?
That I don't know if it was right away on how many candidates they typically would do before the test could be changed, but I guess while we're on the testing issue, the interesting thing we discovered was it was going to cost $16,000 to change from the 97 uniform to the 2000 international to change the test. And so, you know, we had, that was part of that $100,000 that we had figured in. There'd be some cost. We're a little surprised it would be $16,000, but we went ahead and RSA'd that over. But then we find out later with the, I think you have the fiscal notes attached to these bills before you now, to change from the 97 uniform to the 2000 uniform costs $40,000. But one has to ask, well, why is it more expensive to change within the so-called same family? I think the obvious answer is not the same family. I think the 97 uniform would have more ownership by part of it than now the 2000 uniform. For some reason, it's more complex and it's harder to update the test of that than it is to go to the international one. I would think that. Option under the 2000.
Anything further, Mr. Powell? That gets us through the teleconference. We do have a couple individuals here in Juneau. Mr. Perkins, you had an opportunity to speak last time.
I was only going to speak, Madam Chairman, in the event the substitutes came forward and only to support.
Okay. Mr. Guinelli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Dean Vanelli with the Department of Law. Let me first start out by probably putting a little better perspective on what Department of Public Safety went through to adopt these codes in response, particularly to Representative Hayes' question. First of all, in general, a state agency doesn't have any obligation to engage in any process before it puts regulations out for public comment. It decides what regulations it thinks it ought to adopt, and then it puts them out for public comment. And the process that the public has is the regulation process in the Administrative Procedures Act. But in this particular case, Department of Public Safety, because they understood this was a big deal, I asked the legislature for money, and they had a process before the regular regulation adoption process. And what they did was they sent letters out to a number of organizations, statewide organizations, inviting them to come to the Department of Public Safety, meet with them in work sessions, and talk about these codes. And just let me just read you, it's not a long list, but from an affidavit submitted in the litigation over this, that they sent letters to the Alaska Home Builders Association, the Alaska Professional Design Council, American Institute of Architects, the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning Engineers, American Society of Mechanical Engineers, the Associated General Contractors, Building Owners and Managers Association, and the Mortgage Bankers Association. In addition to all of the municipal jurisdictions that had code regulation authority. Now, all of those people were invited to come to these work sessions in Juneau, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Soldotna, and meet with the Department of Public Safety. If that wasn't enough of a representative sample, maybe they should have invited more people, but they felt that was a sufficient list of statewide organizations, and they invited them. And they had day-long sessions in these four locations, and this was before they even got to the point of deciding what the codes ought to be and what changes they needed to make. Because whenever Department of Public Safety adopts a code, it also has to adopt certain changes to make those codes fit to the needs of Alaska. And in this particular situation, Department of Public Safety, after meeting with all these groups, sat down and came up with, and I guess after finally all the regulation process was done, came up with a list of changes to the codes that amounts to about 76 single-spaced pages. And the department has to do that regardless of whether they're going to adopt the international code or the uniform codes. There are always changes to be made, and I could give you some examples. But once department had done that, once department had decided after meeting with all these organizations what codes it thought it wanted to adopt, only then did it go out to the regular public notice process for administrative regulations. And at that point, went out to the public process, sent notice to all of you, sent notice to everyone on their list, and the public the public process, comment process started. It was determined after that that there was a typographical error in one of the public notices, so they went out again, put out public notice again. That extended the time several months more. Once it got into the summer of 2001, and after meeting with the Regulation Review Committee, Department of Public Safety decided at that point to delay implementation for another 2 months after talking with Catherine Reardon of Ock Licensing. And so this was a long, very carefully crafted process to adopt these codes. Now, I can't tell you which is the better code. I don't know the UMC from the IMC or the uniform codes from the international codes. Well, let me just tell you anecdotally, when I was building my house or having my house built here 20 years ago in Juneau, we were going for our routine inspections, and my contractors, they were a little nervous. They said, "Well, we've drawn the worst inspector in the city of Juneau. I mean, he is really the stickler, the person who dots all the I's and crosses all the T's," and that person is that man right there, Steve Shows. And I thought to myself, that's pretty good. I mean, what's wrong with that? I mean, this is someone who's really going to be looking out for my safety. And when he came to you 2 weeks ago and said, the International Family of Codes is a good family of codes, they're safe, and not only that, but they cut costs for consumers, that convinced me. But I don't expect that would necessarily convince you, because you've heard a lot of people who are well-meaning on both sides of the debate, and really the debate at this point boils down to the international codes, which I have here: mechanical code, fire code, the building code, or the old uniform codes. Now, these are the 82 versions. These are the only ones I have in my office. This is what you're looking at. You're looking at over 1,400 pages of the uniform codes. You're looking at over 1,200 pages of the international codes, and so if you're going to choose between the two, you've got to make a rational decision on choosing between these hundreds and hundreds of pages. But in addition, you've got to face the prospect of, well, let's see, this is 76 single space pages. So if this were in a bill form, to make the conforming amendments to make these codes match up to the Uniform Plumbing Code, and even to choose among all of the various provisions in here, you're looking at probably a 150-page bill just to choose between these codes. And I submit to you that whether you choose the big books or the little books, you're going to have to do exactly the same thing. I think that you've heard a number of people say, let the experts do it. And really, that has been the policy choice that you have made over the years. You've let Department of Public Safety make the choice without being constrained to take one family or another family of codes. And I suggest that really is the best approach. And a number of individuals, really on both sides of the debate, have said, let's have it code neutral. I mean, let's have the experts in the field decide which of these is best. Let's let them make the decision. I mean, I think that we've heard that this was a rush process. I don't think it was. We've heard that it was just a handful of bureaucrats, and I think the indications are from the number of states who have adopted some or all of the international codes that that's not the case. We've heard that it's difficult, that these codes are difficult to teach. Catherine Reardon tells me that the first time that the Uniform Mechanical Code was tested, that a higher percentage of the people taking the test passed the international code, that a higher percentage of the people passed the test under this than the last couple of times that it was taught under the old code. We've heard that it's expensive to buy these books. Maybe that's the case. We've heard that people aren't used to the new codes, but at least in Anchorage, it seems like the design professionals have been using the concepts embodied here for quite a long time. I really think that. Let me just turn briefly to House Bill 437, as I understand it. What that would do is it would take the International Mechanical Code and throw it out and replace it with the Uniform Mechanical Code. Now, because there's no corresponding fire codes and modern fire codes or building codes in the uniform family, what you've got now is two of the big books and one of the little books. And I would suggest that the number of amendments that you have to make all of this conform and make sense is going to be considerably more than you would ordinarily have. So I don't really think that House Bill 437 makes sense. And one of the individuals who spoke this afternoon said, don't adopt both codes. I mean, don't mix and match. Have apples and oranges. So that's our opinion on House Bill 437. On House Bill 436, I'm not certain I really understand the difference between how codes are adopted. There's one process as opposed to another process. I really think it's best to leave it up to the professionals in the field. Let me just turn briefly to occupational licensing and the situation that they face. Department of Public Safety, under its broad grant of statutory authority, adopted the big books. The Division of Occupational Licensing has some statutes which, in definitional sections, make reference to the uniform codes. And the question is, for their purposes in testing and in licensing people, are they going to test on what actually has to be applied in the field, or are they going to test on something that's outdated and isn't in the law? And it was our advice to them that the only thing that made sense was to test what people actually had to apply in the field. I think from a legal standpoint, if the testing were given under a code that wasn't applied in the field and someone failed this test, they would have probably a good lawsuit against the state of Alaska saying, you know, I failed this test, but you expect me to apply this? It doesn't make sense. Where's the job relatedness? And I would hate to have to defend the state of Alaska in a lawsuit like that. We advise the Division of Occ Licensing, you ought to be testing on this. Let's get a test that was developed for this. And they followed that advice. During last summer, during the Regulation Review Subcommittee or committee hearings, there was, I guess, testimony that people are confused. We don't know what we're going to be tested on. The statutes appear to say one thing, and you tell us now you're going to be testing on something else. So we further advised Division of Occ Licensing, well, let's amend your adopt regulations that make it clear to people, that put people on notice when, in the statutes, when it makes reference to the Uniform Mechanical Code, what we mean is any mechanical code adopted by Department of Public Safety and that you have to actually apply in the field. And they followed our advice on that as well, and that's the regulations that are in existence right now. So House Bill 399, which would throw out the testing on the big book and put back the testing on the little book, in our view, really doesn't make a lot of sense. And we believe that it puts the Division of Occ Licensing back in the same dilemma that it faced quite a long time ago, deciding what to do. And I think it's not a good position to be in. My advice is the same as advice I heard from a lot of other people. The statutes really should be code neutral. It ought to be left to the professionals. I don't want to be doing this again in a couple of years. I'm sure all of you don't want to be doing this, but I think the only way to avoid that is by making it code neutral and let the professionals make the choice. If there are specific problems, if there are specific issues that need to be addressed, they ought to be addressed in the regulatory process, and to the extent they aren't, then those specific problems can be addressed in the legislature, rather than dealing with 1,000-plus pages of very technical codes and maybe 100 or so pages of amendments to those codes. I know I've taken longer than other people got, but I wanted to give you that overview, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that was really good, Dan. I appreciate it. But the only problem I don't understand, and I guess you need to explain this to me, because you said, well, they should let the experts decide. The list of folks that the fire marshal sent this to was only one half of the experts. You still had the folks who were actually supposed to implement this, the plumbers. And how can you leave out that section? Of course they would be upset if I was a plumber and I was not involved in this process, and then, you know, you're telling me I have to go through new training in the whole nine yards, I'll be highly upset, especially if I saw in statute that the book that I've been following all this time is no longer in service. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but they left a big chunk of people out of the process. And it makes no sense to me that you would. I don't think we would have had this problem if all players were at the table originally.
Through the chair, Representative Hayes, I'm not sure that I can really disagree with you about if there were other people who needed to be at the table, perhaps it could have been done differently. But the process the Department of Public Safety went through was far more extensive than the usual regulation-making process. And from the comments that I heard, particularly from the plumbers and the people in the unions, about, well, we have to buy new books and we aren't used to the new codes. I'm not certain that just being there at the table would have satisfied them. I think that they, for whatever reason, people are wedded to a certain things that they're used to, and change is difficult for a lot of people. And I think we would have still been here. But I'm also agreeing that public safety might have been more inclusive in the process leading up to the public process, of the normal public process for regulations.
Thank you.
Representative Meyer, did you have a question?
No.
Go ahead, Representative Rucker.
Mr. Guinelli, you are recommending that we go code neutral here in terms of our statutory schemes. Let the professionals do it. Wouldn't we be granting a significant amount of our power and authority to the bureaucracy if we did that?
Through the chair, Representative Brokberg, I think that has been the policy choice that the legislature has made for a number of years. There are absolutely no restrictions right now on Department of Public Safety's authority to adopt regulations, and I don't see that anybody has suggested that they have ever abused that authority. I guess what I'm suggesting.
Oh, really? Have you been in these hearings? I thought I'd seen you sitting here for the last.
Other than, I mean, in the past, other than right now, I guess what I'm suggesting is that.
Oh, you missed the plumbing wars. You missed these wars.
I guess what I'm suggesting is that I'm not certain that every 3 years when there's another set of these, the legislature wants to go through the process of or the prospect of a 150-page bill going through all this, or having staff or somebody go through this line by line, and would probably rather rely on the experts in the field, the people who actually have to apply these, because it's at least in the first instance, it's the design officials who are designing the buildings and the architects, and then it's the inspectors who are actually inspecting. I think you'd rather rely on them, and that's why I'm making that suggestion.
Well, the point of fact is, it's been the policy of this committee to make half that step by statutorily putting the code outside of the legislature and let the departments adopt the various additions, yes, on a cyclical basis. But they always had the stipulation as to what code was going to be adopted, with the exception of the Department of Public Safety, which has the code neutral type language, and which has caused this problem in the first place. So I'm not sure why everybody's running around recommending we should be code neutral when these guys bungled the job in the first place, except you might want to go all the way back to the Senate Finance Committee, because that caused this whole thing to begin with. They gave them the money. Anyway, thank you.
Sure,
Madam Chair. In the packet there is, looks like there was a lawsuit. Alaska Mechanical Contractors sued the state. Is that suit still in process?
Through the chair, it is still in process. There was a motion for a preliminary injunction, which was denied. Both parties have filed motions for summary judgment, in essence saying there are no facts in dispute. It's purely a legal matter, and judge, you know, we were both entitled to win. The judge has scheduled a hearing in that matter May 9th, and so it is still pending.
Is the Department of Law worried that if the legislature were to take action and say, in a sense, pass 399 and essentially slap the hands of Department of Public Safety and say, no, this is a legislative edict, not a regulation, something you change in regulation, are you worried that if the legislature takes that step that might weaken your case in court?
Through the chair. Representative Halker, I'm not sure it would weaken it as much as perhaps moot out the case. I mean, I wouldn't have to go to Anchorage for the oral argument in it. And certainly any time the legislature wants to clarify the law in that regard, that's fine. I recommend against doing it in that way, but I think it would moot out at least a portion of the case.
Mr. Paul, in your opinion, I mean, do you feel that, I mean, it was your testimony that the department went above and beyond their normal scope of what they do, including the public in this process. Do you think that there's any merit to the contention that, they basically usurped the legislature's authority by, implementing these regulations, by changing?
No, I don't. I don't think there's any merit. And let me just say that the judge who decided the preliminary injunction motion was the presiding judge of the Third Judicial District, Elaine Andrews, and she was handling that case only temporarily because it was going to be assigned to somebody else. But in her decision, she said, "I'm not going to be handling this case, the final resolution of it, so I feel fairly free to comment on it," and came as close to a judge has in saying that there was no merit to it. I'm confident the state is going to prevail, and so I have no worries about that.
I think the word was almost virtually frivolous, or what was it?
Through the chair, I believe Judge Andrews said,
"Verging on
frivolous." While this case is not frivolous, and then went on to say that they had not shown that they were
the F word showed up in there.
Mr. Pinelli, you didn't really go into too much detail in terms of if we were to adopt 399. It's been represented to us by the sponsor that we need to act on this separation of powers issues. You kind of referred to the conundrum that it puts off licensing in terms of the testing. And what I want to know very clearly is if we were to, 399 were to become law, where does that put us exactly? What is going to, we roll back the clock, so we're prior to September 15th, but explain to the committee exactly what would be in effect and how it would, in your opinion, be conflicting, if it is at all.
What it would mean is, what 399 would mean is that the Division of OCC licensing would be prohibited from testing on the international code and would be required to conduct testing based on the Uniform Mechanical Code. I believe that would subject the state to potential for litigation by someone who would be an unsuccessful applicant. In other words, someone who would not have passed the test given under the Uniform Code. And the reason is they would argue that the testing under this is not related to what I actually have to do in the field. It's in essence an arbitrary exercise of the state's authority to test me on something that I'm not going to have to apply. And I am worried that the result of that is going to be that the court is going to order the division to do something that the legislature might not want it to do, and that is either just issue licenses without any testing or to go back to testing under this. I think that the whole question of the legislature's authority is, I mean, it's always one that the legislature ought to be sensitive to, but the real question for us as state lawyers and in looking at statutes and trying to interpret them, and judges looking at statutes and trying to interpret them, is basically saying, what was the legislature's intent? And when the courts and when we as state lawyers are looking at statutes that have been in existence for many years, and when at that time the only codes were the ones with the U instead of the I, we have to really ask ourselves, when the legislature said, you know, uniform with a capital U, did it really mean that for all time and for all in all circumstances that's what the testing ought to be done under? Or did the legislature really intend, and does the legislature really intend now, that applicants ought to be tested based on what they're going to have to apply in the field? And we think it's the latter interpretation, and that's what we advise the division to do. The other alternative for the division was to stop testing at all, and we didn't think that was responsible. I mean, it keeps people from getting their licenses, it keeps them from engaging in business, and that wasn't acceptable to the division, it wasn't acceptable to the administration.
And so it's your opinion, though, that the statutes don't give the flexibility to OCC licensing to, we're not, public safety has made their, adopted their international. until such time as we change the statutes that affect AUC licensing, you're saying that they're prohibited from testing under anything other than the uniform, your little book?
No, Madam Chair, that's not what I'm saying. The Division of AUC Licensing has issued a regulation, adopted a regulation, that says that where in the statutes it says uniform mechanical code, we are interpreting that to mean whatever mechanical code the Department of Public Safety has adopted for application in Alaska. And so right now, as things exist, with nothing happening, no bills passing, that they are going to be continuing the testing based on the big book. I really think this legislature could do nothing, and things would be just fine.
Why do you say that?
If nothing were passed, Division of AUC Licensing would continue to test on the law that's in existence, and the Department of Public Safety and the various inspectors around the state would be inspecting under the international code. I think that does leave some ambiguity, some uncertainty in the law. But in terms of application of the laws, in terms of application of the testing, I think business would go on as it is going on right now. I'm not suggesting that's mm-hmm. necessarily what you should do. I think my recommendation was for code neutrality, but because I think that would be clearer to everyone. But it is an option to do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Other questions of Mr. Bonelli? It helped bringing your big books and little books, by the way. We like the visual props.
I thought it might.
Ms. Reardon, your body language has been most active. Would you care to comment on anything?
After all of this, Catherine Reardon, Director of the Division of Occupational Licensing, for the record. And since Mr. Bonelli is much more eloquent than I am, I guess all that I have to say is that just passing 399, annulling my regulations, which I'd call for shorthand the testing regulations, is kind of my personal worst-case scenario, because my regulation that says that in my occupational licensing mechanical administrator statutes, where it says uniform mechanical code, it means the code that's in effect in the state, my reg that does that, if it goes away without the legislature going on in that bill to say, and what you are supposed to do is the following, you are supposed to test on the uniform code. Or you are supposed to do something else. Without that second part of a bill, I'm just left back being told you were bad to do those rigs, but we're not going to tell you we aren't going to give you a hint about what you're supposed to be doing. Yeah, so just to be blunt, and that's to me just waiting for my next lawsuit. And so I guess what I'd say is if you feel like I shouldn't have for some reason adopted that regulation, you liked the public policy all right, but you didn't like the fact I did it by reg, well, then I'd say please just do that same policy and statute and say Catherine should be testing on what public safety's code is. If you didn't like that public policy and you do believe I should be testing on the uniform code despite the fact they've got the international code in effect, then I'd ask you, please state, you know, please make some amendments to my statute that make that doubly clear, and I will sure enough test on the uniform code. But please don't just take away what I've done and not replace it with something. That's my comment there. My other comment
is... Can I interrupt you there, then? Would it be safe to say that if we were to take up the recommendation that we adopt these, the two CSs, that doesn't help you at all then?
Madam Chair, if you pass just 399, I've got a problem. If you pass 399 and something else, not just out of this committee, but all the way through the process, I guess what I'd ask is make it one bill so I don't have the risk that one will pass and the other won't. But if they both were to pass, then I think you probably would have given me the instruction. But in that instruction, my only other comment is in the drafting, because I have no knowledge and will not comment on which code is best, because that's not anything that I know about. Mine is just when you settle on what code you want out there in the state, what do I do with my testing and discipline of mechanical administrators? That's my total involvement here. If in the occupational licensing statutes you're actually saying the uniform mechanical code as published by X organization, I guess I'd ask you to consider whether you want to be saying it that tightly, as published by, because I think that the pattern of public safety has been, even if you, in the bills, even if you tell them to adopt the uniform code, and only the uniform code, they do make these local Alaska adjustments. So I think it would be, so I would be testing on the pure code as published by, but the one in effect might be the uniform code with all these local adjustments, local Alaska adjustments. So I would suggest that my preference would be, if you're going to say public safety has to adopt the uniform code but can make local Alaska adjustments, that my statutes just cross-reference, like my reg did, the public safety code, so that I won't be testing
tighter. You don't want to be hanging out.
No, or so that I'm testing whatever, like, decide what the code should be through public safety and then just reference that in my statutes. Don't use other wording in my statutes that might present the possibility of being out of sync. That's a long thing for this time of day, but it might be a detail, but it's something that I feel strongly about. Also, in the draft CS, I think that you may have left out of, or whoever may have left out of, one of my statute sites. That's another technical thing, because it's 6 o'clock and I can't think that detail.
Other questions of Catherine? Representative Rupert.
Madam Chair, I had passed out here kind of a marked up version of House Bill 399, the A version.
Mm-hmm.
And, Catherine, this is basically what we were discussing a couple of weeks ago. Whereas, what this would do is delete the specific reference to the Uniform Mechanical Code in here, but then it also, Section 5 goes away, Section 6 goes away, all those references. But what this does, I think this provides for a generic reference to the mechanical code that was adopted by the Department of Public Safety, and then annuls the regulations adopted by Ms. Reardon's crew. But what this does is solves our constitutional problem and asserts our legislative jurisdiction, and leaves the code and testing status quo as it is right now, but reasserts the legislature's constitutional prerogative. So we can kill two birds with one stone in one sense. Now, that still remains, I mean, the other issues, I think, still remain before us, but what that does, I think it satisfies the author of the bill's intent to nullify the regulations, which we believe were on the edge of a constitutional crisis, which we want to avoid here. So, I think, you know, I might make that a suggestion.
Does it solve the testing issue then?
Yes, it does, because what it does, it remains the IMC would still remain the code before, because you're adopting the mechanical code that's been adopted by the Department of Public Safety. But that leaves us in the status quo. So if we want to go on and do anything else, then it's up to us to do another bill, I think. But this also solves the problem about trying to intertwine all this together and make it too complicated.
Madam Chair, this marked-up version does have the cross-referencing that I was advocating. On the first page, which is Occupational Licensing Statute 0818, it says the mechanical code adopted under public safety statute. That's what that 1870 is.
Yeah, it doesn't specify whether it's the international.
And then on the second page, section 2, that's Occupational Licensing Statute. Again, once again, it references there on page 14 the public safety code. And then it does the same thing in the last place in Occupational Licensing Statute, which is section 3. It just cross references. Then the big issue that was what I was advocating. Then the big issue comes in section 5. Where it starts telling public safety what to do, what code to adopt that I'm referencing, that my statutes are referencing, and I can't tell, is that staying in, or
that would be deleted?
That's deleted.
That's deleted. Okay, all right. So, but it does have the cross referencing system, and at the end it annuls our regulations.
Yeah, 5 and 6 are deleted.
I do want to say, you know, for the record, that I believe that my division department acted constitutionally and legally in adopting that regulation. I don't take that. I understand and believe in the powers of the various branches, and I don't want to kind of leave in my kind of haphazard style some sense that I don't care about that, and that I did believe I was acting legally. And I think that it went through law review, and it appears at this point that we have a good chance of having the courts agree that it was legal. So I didn't want to easily accept the idea that somehow I had violated the law. But I do want to say that, and I'm also reassured by the public policy aspect, that we chose through our regulation. It's what's being mirrored here. But rather than us doing it in reg, it'll be in statute, and that should make both sides comfortable. But I didn't want you to think that I just willy-nilly, you know, disregard the legislative prerogatives. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bitney is signed up to testify. He's the one person that we have not yet gotten to on our list. John, do you want care to speak? Okay. Are there any questions of Mr. Bitney? Representative Rookberg, you've had a question for everybody today. I would feel slighted if I were you, John.
No. If we pass the home inspector bill, he'll be all right. No, I haven't asked everybody.
That's true. We have skipped over some of them. I don't know whether you help things or
Madam Chair, can we ask Representative McGuire?
Absolutely. I would love to have Representative McGuire come and speak to this.
Madam Chairman, this is my first time seeing this, so I'm just looking through it right now. And I don't know what the wishes of the committee are, but I certainly think that Representative Rookberg has hit the nail on the head. And I just really quickly, I mean, the part that I care about is that you keep the annulment of regulations in there, but then you're making an attempt to have a solution out there. And I agree with what Catherine said in the sense that you do put yourself in a quandary if you annul the regulations without a solution. I recognize that. But the one thing that I do want to make clear, and this is for the committee to look over and make a decision, and I've said that from the very beginning, that it's the Labor and Commerce Committee's purview to look at the public policy decision behind this, and that's included in this now. But one of the things that has been really hard for me to sit over there and listen to, and since I get my minute to speak, I'll speak, is that I don't take my job lightly either, and I have chaired this committee for a year and a half, and I have come up against situations where regulations have been promulgated that have been kind of gray, and Representative Hayes sits on the committee, and there have been some question about whether, well, was that really our intent or wasn't it? And as Representative Hayes is aware, what usually ends up happening is we ask the department to go to a negotiated rulemaking, a kind of a deal, bring the shareholders together and try to work it out. Or we ask them for a bit more time in the public comment period so that they can come back with something that's better. This is the only case that I have ever seen come through my committee that is black and white, in my opinion. And what is hard for me to sit through is to listen to the statements of the two previous speakers and trying to say that in some way there was any gray area here, that this was some sort of generic term. It's very clear. Madam Chairman, the statute was clear. It's a copyrighted document. It's a very specific code, and it's very different than the international code. And I think you guys have become aware of that through this committee process. People feel very passionately about one code or the other, and that in and of itself speaks to the difference. There isn't this sort of generic definition out there. It's just not. It's simply not true. Speculating about what the courts could do, boy, I think that's dangerous. I don't really know myself, but what I do know is that we do have three branches of the government, and I know what my job is as chairperson of the Admin Reg Review Committee, and it's to make sure that those lines don't get blurred. So the part that I'm passionate about, obviously, and care about is the fact that these regulations need to be annulled. It clearly is our job and our responsibility to make the public policy decisions. That's our job. I think Representative Rookberg is making an attempt at doing that in addition to annulling the regs and asserting our power. And I like that part. And I think I will, at this point, just leave it to the committee to debate that public policy part of it. And I think one of the things that has been touched upon throughout this committee process that is really important to recognize is that it is difficult because you've got a lot of different departments that are dealing with these codes, and perhaps centralizing it, perhaps neutralizing it and making it more generic will offer some clarity. But I certainly think this is the right way to do it, doing it through the legislative process and doing it through statute. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Representative Webb.
Just a quick question for you before you go off. Because the original 399 is not too far from where we are right now with the deletion of a couple sections here. And for whatever practical or strategical reasons, you chose to just go with the repealer and allow other legislation to address it. But this is where you started out. So yeah. I'm making the assumption that we're not too far afield from where you as a sponsor originally began, if we were to adopt what Representative Roepberg is suggesting here.
Madam Chairman, I think that that's fair to say. The only difference is that at the beginning of this, if there were a place that I started as far as leaning on public policy, it would probably be leaning toward the Uniform Mechanical Code. And my reasons for doing that had more to do with practicality than anything, and that was that I was hearing from the contract community and the mechanical contractors, the people in the field that are doing the work, that there was a lot of concern about their obligation to be familiar with a code of which they didn't know. As you heard in testimony last week, there is an oath that a mechanical contractor takes that they really are to be responsible. I mean, at the end of the day, they're the ones that are responsible for knowledge of the code of the state inside and out. The one concern that I have still that is out there, and again, it's for this committee to debate and decide, and Madam Chairman, the reason I ended up going to a stripped-down version was for this very reason, is that I still think those concerns are out there. I certainly don't know that they have been resolved yet. It is the case, and I think many of you have probably been contacted via email and letters, that there are numerous people in the mechanical contractor community that are very concerned. Even though they have already taken and passed a test, they took it under the Uniform Mechanical Code, and that's what they know. That's what they know inside and out and have for many, many years. So I don't take lightly, and nor do I believe this committee does, any decision that affects somebody's livelihood. I think that change is tough, and sometimes it's good, and sometimes it's bad. Change is always difficult, and I think there's a certain element of that has come into this. Certainly, people are uncomfortable with change. But I guess my only lingering concern that I have is that the process itself by which Department of Public Safety, and that's really who initiated all of this, we've now come back down to that point, went through in adopting these regulations, there still is some concern by the mechanical contractor community that they were left off the table, essentially. The other concern that I would just bring up that's out there and is a bit of a lingering concern myself is the statement that Mr. Perkins made that when you're looking on the national level at who it is that is at the table in deciding what the new edition of the code will include, it's unfortunate to me that in the International Mechanical Contractor Code that there aren't more worker bees at the table. I think that is a concern to me, and I'm being honest about that. I would prefer to see a code that is generated by all the stakeholders. So that's a concern to me, and perhaps that's something that can be worked out. But we are in this position now that is a very awful, awkward position, which is that the train has already left the station, and it's getting close to Fairbanks by now. It's way down the tracks. And so it's a pickle. And I just want to say once again on the record why this is so maddening to me, because it didn't have to be this way. And I really am concerned, and Representative Rookberg hit the nail on the head. It started with the appropriation by Finance Committee, but then it went a step further, and I held, Madam Chairman, a committee August 14th. I broke everybody's summer up and made them come sit there and be online, and I had the Department of Community and Economic Development there, I had the Department of Public Safety, and I was so clear about this train coming down the tracks, and there were 60 people in the room, and the tension, you could just feel it, and I asked everyone there, please let the legislature come back in January and do this the right way through the committee process. And why that was not respected, I just don't know. And it's frustrating because it's left us all, I think, very frustrated. All of us have been frustrated through this process that have had to deal with these codes. So you're right, I started at the beginning with a bill that not only annulled the regs, but then asserted a public policy statement. I later decided to remove myself from that and allow other members to carry those bills. Representative Rookberg has offered a solution. I think it's best for this committee to make a decision about that. I really do.
Thank you. Are there other questions of the committee members? Representative Crawford?
I just have a comment. I have to voice how I feel about this so far. There's an awful lot of this that I don't know about. Back in December, I was in Houston, and there was a fire next to the airport when I was leaving the airport. It was an apartment complex there, and I drove up because I saw the plume of smoke coming out. It's a two apex buildings that caught on fire before my eyes. It took about 20 to 25 minutes for the fire to go from one end of this eightplex all the way through the building and jump across an area there and into the next building and engulf both those buildings within the 25 to 30 minutes that I was there. They didn't have the fire breaks. I heard earlier that Houston at one time got to the point where they didn't have codes. They didn't have the fire breaks between those buildings. It's very important that we have codes in place. The Uniform Building Code is, to my knowledge, is the more restrictive of the two codes. Maybe the International Code is cheaper for buildings to be built. I don't know that I want cheaper buildings in Alaska. I want safer buildings. If the Uniform Building Code is the safer of the two, the more prescriptive, that's what I want to see done. I understand that Representative Rookberg is doing his best here to take care of what we see as a problem. But to abrogate our ability to say either uniform or international, and I believe that's what this would do. Well, I'm mistaken then, and that's why I'm making this comment. I want to see us make what I feel is the right decision to go to the more prescriptive and safer code. So if I'm mistaken in my assumptions here, please clear it up for me.
Representative Roper?
First, I think what your most critical thing is that it's not a problem. This just doesn't determine one way or the other. If we enact this, as I suggest, it's generic. It's what the code neutral language was, which I don't necessarily like, but for this particular bit here, I think it's probably the most appropriate way to go. I would say that in terms of your you have to separate all the family of codes from what we've been talking about in terms of the mechanical code. It's the metal benders code, it's the mechanical code. Mm-hmm. In terms of adopting a building code, that's different. And here's something you have to understand here, is that the people who developed the original UBC that you've been building all the steel buildings under all these years are the same guys that just drafted the IBC. And there is no building code right now by AATMO and the uniform people. They're working on it, but they don't have one right now. So the 2000, that's what happened. That's why the Department of Public Safety, in their testimony even today, was they were driven because there was a kind of a default situation. But that's not, I mean, at that time, but there's a lot of other reasons that militated towards it. In terms of therefore, the ICBO people who drafted the UBC and now draft the IBC have done some things to make it a little more flexible. But I don't think they're abrogating the public safety issues. I'm going to tell you right now, I could be wrong, but up until a few years ago, I know for a period of 25 years, there's not been a death in a fire-sprinkled building in the world, at least not in the United States, and that's the big issue. It was the most frustrating thing for me in my career in building high-rise buildings in Anchorage to have every 3 years the building cycle and the building codes would change, and the inside fire protection mechanisms from the MGM fire and the rules, every time I turned around, I was getting slapped with a new code. Even though we had fully sprinkled buildings and we knew we had very, very safe conditions, the interior layouts had to be structured with all these firewalls and other plenum. We had plenum penetrations that were going through all the way up to the waffle on the underside of the concrete pans that we had, you know, for the floors. And you know, it just, yeah, I mean, I can go on and on about that stuff, but yeah, I won't. But believe me, I spent 15 years of my life busting my chops over building codes, and I don't think I think the decision we need to make here as a legislature is we need to clean up this whole mess once and for all. We need to consolidate all these codes, and we need to make a decision about whether we want to go code neutral or even stipulate a code and make that tough decision. It may not be, and I think one thing we might want to consider here with this one is whether we do want to have some transitional training period for the testing, because I have a lot of sympathy for these guys, but I think that one of the biggest problems is that they're worried about it's the old guy wanting to have them learn a new trick here, and that's what's happening. This is the greatest thing in the world to have a national building code and some consistency, and that's what the international codes are doing for the first time. So we can have some interstate congruence, you can have building materials put in a modular unit and stuff like that and shipped, and we can have some productivity and savings. And so those, I think, is a real great step forward. So we shouldn't be out of line with that. But I think we should be sensitive to the workers and the mechanical contractors and those that we're asking to make a big, big change. So that's something I've been sensitive to, and I know it's there, but I don't think we should be as concerned about it. Matter of fact, it's the ICBO guys that have been, they're the structural engineers that build the steel buildings that you work on, and not the seven-story wood structure that they say it could be built under the other one. But, everybody's going to badmouth each other. I mean, so I think the tough decision, it remains with us, and I don't think we should give that power away to the bureaucracy to select the final code. Yes, but they should, once we do, they should do the, every 3 years cyclical adoption of the additions and go through that, and any local amendments and fire exchanges and Fairbanks and all that stuff. But that shouldn't even be around here. But I think selection of the code is important, and it's a public policy. And we should make that decision. And if there's a need to change that and that's not working, then we should bring it back here and have that argument. But anyway.
Representative Ruppert, if having said all that...
Sorry.
No, I know. No, it's very good. It's very helpful. But if we were to move out 399 as you have suggested with these changes, do you view that as this just kind of takes care of the immediate issue and
the Band-Aid?
It's a Band-Aid, and we still continue with looking at the proposals that Representative Harris has presented to the committee. I mean, what do you think?
I'll be quite candid with you. I think what it does ratify the status quo. So If you're going to overturn that and try to go back to the UMC and keep Dwight happy, you're going to have to go to another bill.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just keep that in mind. I mean, I think realistically that's it. But I think the cat's already out of the bag. Matter of fact, the Senate Finance Committee 2 years ago, or 2.5 years ago, basically agreed because of the notes, and that's the first time I saw that, Joe, is that it's right into the BRU request that they're going to adopt the international code based on the FEMA argument, which I hadn't even heard that one. That was a new one. But it's right, I know, but it's right there. And the fact of the matter is we've got Anchorage that already spent a year and a half in their code cycle doing the same thing. We got testimony, with the exception of the UPC in Fairbanks. They've done the same thing. We've got all these buildings and everybody's concerned about lawsuits and liabilities. I think if we went ahead and rolled the wheel back, the clock back, all those people would be in a situation where they're subject to the legal challenges and liabilities that may result from that. So I don't think we can step backwards. What we got to do is help the people in the business make sure that they're comfortable enough to go forward and learn some new things, but also be very fair to them in terms of the educational requirement.
I feel a task force coming on.
Yeah, or a subcommittee.
Can we go ahead and move this and then do a subcommittee for the other two bills?
Representative Meyer, we can do whatever you want.
It's just a suggestion, just to
Well, the only thing, Madam Chair, I'd say is that we might want to consider if we take up the marked up $399 that I presented was to look at maybe amending it to include a selection of giving the mechanical administrator a choice of which exam he wanted to take. Ms. Ritter, can you want to speak to that?
Sorry.
Over a transitional period.
Yeah, I perked up again because I had to do my testing. Catherine Bearden, Director of Occupational Licensing. I want to be clear that the people who currently have mechanical administrator licenses, they do not have to retest. They passed their test. They got their license. They just renew their license every 2 years. They do continuing education in order to renew. And it would be my idea to require that the continuing education be on the international code because that, you know, prepares people. But there's no test for the current people. The new people entering need to pass the test. We changed the test from uniform code to international code with the December 14th or 15th test. We offer the test quarterly. So we offered the test under the uniform code until the day before the public safety regs changed. So we tested on September 14th under uniform code. Public safety changed its regs the 15th. The next test that was coming up, which was December, we offered it on the international code, and we just offered it again today on the international code because March 15th was the quarterly date. So we have only results back from... So if the concern is that new people coming in taking the test may have difficulty passing the international code test because they did their journeyman plumbing experience under the uniform code, there I'd say that we have only a small sample, one test from December, 8 people took it, we had one fail. So, but if that trend continues, if today's test we find out 30 days from now we get the results back from the company, if we have a similar passage rate, I'd say that the passage rate is better in a small sample than when we were testing under the uniform code. So there may not be a need to change, you know, to give a transition on the test because fewer people failed in December than failed in September and failed in the previous June.
Well, given, Madam Chair, given that remarkable success rate, have you interviewed, like had a post-exit poll about why that happened? Or is there such a similarity between the two codes that there, I would assume, the body of knowledge that...
I was just happy. I thought, what if everyone fails?
The metal bender is going to learn. He's going to learn one way or the other. And, you know,
yeah, I would say the exam, just so you know, we buy it from a national testing company that does lots of states tests called Experior. So we just told them, that's where the $16,000 came in, how much will it cost to get it changed? They told us, we said, you know, here's the money, change it. So in terms of how hard the test was, how easy, it was the same company that was doing the test for us when it was uniform, so I'd assume it was equally difficult, but we were just happy that only one person failed. Representative Ricker?
Well, what would be the problem if you offered an election on the part of a testee, a newcomer, to take either the old UMC test or take the new international test? Can you do that?
I'm sure if I paid the testing company to write a 2000 version of the uniform one.
No, you'd have, couldn't you default back in the prior one?
We were testing on the 97 uniform
code. That's what's there.
That if I call them up, I say, can you keep sending us that one you used to send us? Assuming that they just say fine, then yes, I haven't asked them that question, but it seems feasible. I guess I'd say, why would we be testing on the uniform code if the day after they take the test and they get the results and they get their license, they're supposed to use the international code?
They spent all this time learning the uniform code, and
that's what they should be tested on, if they spent several years and thousands of hours learning.
Perhaps not to belabor it, but I think people, you know, we would say, and brush up on this uniform code you'll never use before you take the test. But really, if you want me to do that, you know,
well, if you can make an election so somebody could choose which examination, that way, if somebody wanted to take the UMC one, they could.
At least, like I said,
a year of transitional
period. If you think that's good public policy, I'll do it, you know.
Well, I think that's one of the biggest complaints we've heard, is that there wasn't sufficient training and transition timing of the process.
I think that's for people to have to use the code in the field. The people who already have the licenses, I don't think we're necessarily hearing it from people who will, you know, are newly preparing, but you know,
I don't know.
Really, it's whatever you'd like.
Well, I think that's what I recall, was the guys that were out there on the job not wanting to have to flip through the big book versus the little book. I don't recall it in relation to the test.
And the trainers who train people for their journeymen, they also have to.
Representative Hayes.
I'd like to move House Bill 389 as amended.
Wait, before you do that, we took up the CS for 399, so what we need to do is we need to rescind the adoption of the CS.
Right.
We did at the first meeting.
Oh, yeah. Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Roper.
I move that we rescind our action in adopting the version C of the House, made substitute for House Bill 399, 22LS1461-C, Bannister 220.
Is there objection? Seeing no objection, we have rescinded our action in adopting the CS for House Bill Number 399.
And by clarification?
Representative Robert.
It would be Sections 5 and 6 are deleted, just to make sure everybody's clear on that. Okay. And then the other uniform mechanical words. Or as shown.
Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House Bill Number 399 as amended. I'm not sure how we would actually do this.
Well, I think we're going to need to take
as amended.
Version as amended?
Well,
we
might just want to note what the amendments are. Let's adopt the amendments.
Oh, that worked.
Representative Roper.
Oh, I move on page 1 that we delete the word on line 11, addition of the uniform. And then on line page 2, line 13, the word uniform. On page 2, line 24, deleting the addition of the uniform. And on page 3, line 7, the words uniform mechanical. That can be conceptual amendment number 1 to the version A.
That's conceptual amendment number 1 to version A. Is there objection?
Yes.
There's objection. Speak to your objection.
Madam Chair, I think we have an opportunity to fix a problem. I think the maker of the amendment said very eloquently, this is a band-aid case. Don't believe we should be band-aiding anything together at this point.
Day 61. Okay.
Further discussion? Seeing no discussion, we'll call for a vote. Everyone clear what we're doing?
Voting on the chair. Can I ask a question? This is awkward, but.
Representative McGuire, now that you've amended my bill with the same title, and if it fails, does this committee have the opportunity to bring up HB 399 as it sat just prior to this, before addressing simply the annulment of regulations? The only reason I'm asking is because if this fails, the public policy part of it, I just want to state on the record, you know, I still want to pursue my bill on the annulment of the regulations.
And I think right now all we're taking up is this conceptual amendment number 1 that would basically remove reference to the uniform.
Got it. Thank you.
So that's the amendment that we have. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Representative Meyer?
Yes.
Representative Cox?
No.
Representative Roper?
Yes.
Representative Crawford?
No.
Representative Hayes?
No.
Representative Mikowski?
Yes.
3.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, so that does fail. Representative Roper.
Have a good weekend.
I take it you don't want to continue with your amendment then.
No, I don't. I'll have to withdraw that. So you guys can figure it out. It's all you win.
Okay, let's have a brief at ease here. Based on the rather extensive commentary and testimony, it's apparent, I think, to all the committee members and certainly the bill sponsors that we need a little bit more work and review on this. I'm going to appoint a subcommittee to work with Representative McGuire and Representative Harris and his staff and the committee. And Representative Roper will chair that committee along with Representative Halcrow and Representative Hayes. And with that, we are going to adjourn at 7:20, marathon session.